When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 329. In this episode, we'll be continuing our journey through the fall of Numenor as we explore the foundation of Numenor in year 32 of the Second Age. Before we get started, I'd like to give a double up air five to our amazing fellowship. Hands up. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsht. Nice. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., and Eru27. A shout out to our newest patron, Corey C. Corey, thank you very much for joining our fellowship. We truly appreciate it. I'd also like to give a shout out to those celebrating their fellowship anniversary in March of 2023. Jacob S., Peter B., Paul D., Stephen S., Jay Z., Bethany E., Daniel D., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien. Thank you all so much for sticking with us over the last year. You can join the Fellowship of the Road by visiting patreon.com/tolkienroad. When you join the Fellowship of the Road, it helps us to keep on evering on and land you some cool perks along the way, like 20% off our merch, including Tolkien Road t-shirts, the coveted Two Trees camper mug, and signed copies of my books. Learn more at patreon.com/tolkienroad. Hey YouTube, hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. All right, so year 32. Numenor becomes a reality in year 32 of the Second Age. In this section, we'll learn about the people who became Numenoreans, the various figures that aided them in establishing Numenor, and how they came to Numenor in the first place. The sources for this section include Akalabaeth, The Peoples of Middle-earth, Lord of the Rings Appendix A, The Letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, and Unfinished Tales. So, the foundation of Numenor. Well, this chapter starts off with a note by Brian Sibley, the editor of The Fall of Numenor. And I thought it'd be helpful to look at this footnote, because there's some... there's kind of an academic point when it comes to the year 32 versus the year 50 as being the founding year of Numenor. And this is what it says. So Tolkien had chronicled the foundation of Numenor as being dated in the year Second Age 50 in a draft for the Tale of Years. And this date was subsequently amended to Second Age 32, but in preparing the Tale of Years for inclusion in Return of the King, the year 32 is given as being the date when the Edain reached Numenor. So it's just to say that there seems to have been a little bit of a discrepancy, and we're also going to find out that the year 32... versus the year 50 could also just have something to do with the idea that, you know, this migration actually took place over a longer period of time, right? It wasn't just all in one year that the Numenoreans came to Numenor, but the first year was the year 32 of the Second Age. Now, who are the Valar? Who are the Valar? It calls the Valar the guardians of the world. So if you've been following the Tolkien Road for a long time, you have probably listened to our episodes on the Silmarillion, so you've probably got a good idea of who the Valar actually are. But if you haven't, then let's break the Valar down for you. Let's just kind of give you the high-level view. It's actually a pretty simple idea. The Valar are the gods of Middle-earth. Okay, they are the powers of Middle-earth. They're these angelic beings. Now, it's important to distinguish and say that in in this legendarium, the Valar are not the supreme powers. There is a ultimate god, right? The uncreated god, if you will, right? And that is Eru Iluvatar. Eru Iluvatar, at the beginning of the Silmarillion, in the chapter called Ainu Lindale, the music of the Ainur, he creates the Valar. So the Valar are these angelic figures that are gods that are created at the very beginning of the Legendarium. The Valar then enter into, and I should clarify, the Valar are a subset of the Ainur, who are kind of all of the gods, right? All of these created gods. The Valar are a subset of these gods that enter into the world of Arda, right? This world, in order to rule it, to shape it, to guide its continued creation. If you want to learn more about that, then I suggest you read Ainu Lindale, read Valaquenta, both of which can be found in the Silmarillion. But you need, I would encourage you also to listen to the episodes that we've done on this podcast about Ainu Lindale and Valaquenta, because that'll really help you understand what's going on with those particular stories and wrap your mind around who the Valar actually are. So that's the Valar. And the Valar are those who are ruling the world, right? Kind of overall. And Morgoth, the evil figure who was kind of the main villain of the first age and who's now banished from the world in the second age, he was one of their kind, right? So he was this great, great god, though created, but a great god, very powerful figure. So that's a little background on the Valar for you. So let's talk about this first passage where we learn about the fathers of men of the three faithful houses. This term Edain, what is Edain? So the Edain reach Numenor. Well, Edain, it's pretty simple, actually. Edain simply means man. It's related to another term, Atani, which is the term for that the elves have for men when they first meet them. Okay. Edain is the you can kind of see the relation Atani Edain, right? There's kind of they sound a little bit similar. All right. Edain would be the Sindarin term. The Sindarin language, there's two languages, kind of two main languages that you need to know about when it comes to the elves, Quenya and Sindarin. Quenya is the language that that the elves speak in the Blessed Realm. It's the highest of all elvish speech. Then you have Sindarin, and this is, it's still a high form of speech, but it's more of the common form that the elves of the First Age would speak in the realm of, in the region of Beleriand. So the Edain are the men who befriend the elves of Beleriand, and specifically here, and they are so named because that's the word for man in Sindarin. Okay, so it's simply the Edain is just the Sindarin word for men. Now, Edain can be used to mean all men, but when we talk about the Edain, typically in the Legendarium, we're usually referring to a small group of men, and these are the men that aided the elves of Beleriand in their struggle against Morgoth. So who are these men? Well, they belong to three houses. These three houses are the houses of Beor, the house of Haleth, and the house of Mauroch, which later becomes the house of Hador. Okay. Now, you can learn all about who those figures are, where those names come from, figures of these three houses. Again, if you read the Silmarillion, it's not super important that you know all the details of those houses if you want to understand the Second Age, but just understand that there were three houses of men that were friends of the elves, that were the elf friends in the First Age. And these are the peoples and their descendants, really their descendants, who are going to be rewarded with this land of Numenor in the Second Age. So we also see mention of this figure, Eanwë. Eanwë is also a god. But Eanwë is not a Valar. In fact, he is a kind of the first servant of the greatest of the Valar, Manwë. So Eanwë, it says, came among them and taught them. So these three faithful houses, these three houses of men that were friends of the elves. Eanwë, at the beginning of the Second Age, comes among them and teaches them. It says they were given great wisdom and power and life more enduring than any others of mortal race have possessed. So just imagine, you know, for a second that this great God, right, like comes among you and teaches you all kinds of things, right? Grants to you knowledge that, you know, you wouldn't otherwise have access to. This is the kind of thing that was happening to these three, to the peoples of these three faithful houses. So they're given this great wisdom, power, and life. We're not given a lot of detail on exactly what those things consisted of, but we can only imagine that they were given insights that most men didn't have. These pretty incredible insights of varying kinds that most men didn't have. We also learn of this figure, Ase. Ase is also a vassal of one of the Valar. He is the vassal of Ulmo, and he raises Numenor out of the sea. So Ulmo is the sea god, right? He is the sea Valar, and so Ase is one of his chief vassals that works for him, and he is the one that raises this land out of the sea. Both Eanwë and Ase are Maiar, okay? That's a lesser rank of Ainur. That's a lesser rank of gods. We referred in previous episodes in this series, we referred to a figure named Melian, who is the mother of Luthien, who also, that bloodline, right, that line of descent carries forward into the kings of Numenor. So Melian was a Maiar, right? She was a Maia who married the king Thingol, right? The elf king Thingol. And so you had the marriage of an elf and of this Maia, and they come together. Their offspring is half elf, half Maia. And so that strain of blood, right? That strain of, if there is such a thing as Maiar blood, right? But that strain of divinity, right? Lowercase d divinity gets passed down into the line of the kings of Numenor. Eanwë, Ase, they are both Maiar. Okay, so they're lesser gods, but they're still gods. They're still very powerful creatures. Obviously, Ase is lifting a whole land up out of the sea. That's pretty, that takes some serious power there. Takes some serious leverage. All right. We also see mention of these figures, Aule and Yavanna. So Aule and Yavanna are actually Valar. They are two of the Valar. Aule is the Valar who is, you can kind of think of him just in one word, he's the Valar of the earth. So Manwë is the Valar of like kind of the skies. Ulmo is the Valar of the seas. Aule is the Valar of the earth, okay, of lands, right? A lot more could be said about him, and we will talk about him more. You can learn a lot more about each of these figures by going to Valaquenta and reading about them. Aule, also, there's a lot to be said about him in several other chapters in the Silmarillion as well. There's a chapter called Of Aule and Yavanna where you can learn about the relationship of these two, which is really interesting because it seems they were supposed to be spouses, okay, but didn't quite work out so well. Aule, for those of you who are interested, is also the father of dwarves. So, in fact, if you want to, it might be a good time to pause and just go read that chapter, Aule and Yavanna, of Aule and Yavanna. It's a really interesting chapter. It's not too long, and it's actually a little bit one of the easier chapters to understand initially if you're coming to the Silmarillion for the first time, at least if you've got some knowledge of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. So we have Aule and Yavanna. They are the ones who enrich this land, right? So Aule enriches it in his own ways. And Yavanna is really like she's the queen of like living creatures, right? That aren't that obviously like, you know, unintelligent creatures, if you will. Okay, so of animals, plants, these kinds of things. All right, so Aule and Yavanna come together. They enrich this land of Numenor in preparation for the coming of the Numenorians, of the first Numenorians. The names of Numenor. There's several different names given for Numenor. Tolkien loved his names. He always gave several different names. We have Elena, which means starward. Anadune, and that's an important word because the language of the Numenorians will come to be called Adunaic, right? Okay. Anadune means westerness, and then Numenor, Numenore, all right? And that becomes Numenor, okay? So any one of those names works for this land. And in the next episode, we're going to talk some about the geography of Numenor. Just a little side note on that. You're going to find that the land of Numenor is actually star-shaped, okay? And this is we'll talk about why this is significant later on. But starward, why, you know, so there's kind of a double meaning there, right? So they're traveling towards, you know, towards this land that's shaped like a star, but they're following a star to get there as well, okay? They're following this star of Eärendil, which is up in the sky. We'll come back to the journey in just a second. A couple more notes. The Dunedain, all right? So that's another term for these people. So we have the Edain initially, and then we have the Dunedain, and that becomes kind of the general name for the people of Numenor, this subset of men that travel to this this island here in the middle of the ocean, the Dunedain. Now, this is a term that you might remember Aragorn is referred to at different times in Lord of the Rings as Dunedain, okay? What does that mean? It literally means the Westmen, men of the West, okay? The Dunedain. So Dune, West, Edain, men. Pretty simple idea. All right. Now, what else did the Numenoreans receive? Okay, so we see that they were kind of given these like sort of general gifts of wisdom, knowledge that others didn't have by Eärendil. But it also notes that they were gifted with this long life. And this is very key. As much as five times the lifespan of mortal men, most men, of normal men. You know, so if you just kind of think like average lifespan of a man, we'll just say like 75 years, you know, what's that times five? Well, gosh, that's 375 years. And some of them live even longer than that, okay? We're going to talk about one of them in just a moment. So they're granted this, you know, much longer lifespan. I mean, just think about that for a second. You know, your life expectancy right now, I don't know where you are in your life, but, you know, you just kind of put round numbers on it, 75 years. Maybe some of you all come from some good genes, are going to get 80, 85, 90, a little higher. You know, people are living longer these days in general. But to think about living 300 years, the idea that, like, when you're thinking you're getting to the end of your life right now, you're actually just in the first third of it. You're just finishing the first third of it. Or the first quarter of it, even, okay? I mean, that's pretty amazing. Imagine what that would do, how that would change your mind, change your psychology. You know, Tolkien doesn't have a lot to say about this, but we can kind of extrapolate from our own experience and understand, like, wow, that would be incredible to just all of a sudden know that you're going to live much longer. And the indication is that it was like, it's not like they're going to live their elderly years for much longer, right? It's that they're if this is the lifespan, and you know you kind of divide up into, you know, youth, young adulthood, middle age, elderly, right? Kind of those four quadrants. Each of those quadrants is actually much longer, right? And actually has a much longer period. So somebody might hit 75 years and just be leaving youth. Now, there's actually some more detail on that, and we'll cover that in later chapters. There were some the book that was published a couple of years ago, The Nature of Middle-earth, actually showed that Tolkien had developed some really detailed thoughts on this, as he is known to do. But we'll get to that in a later chapter, and it's really interesting stuff.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay. It also says they grew wise and glorious and tall. So the Numenoreans were very tall. Okay. They were much taller than normal men. You know, we might have some tall people listening to this. I myself am 5'10". and you know, and you know, I'm not a small guy. I'm not short. You know, there's certainly people that are taller than me. But you know, what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about probably an average height of about 6'3", 6'4", right? You know, that's a good 5 inches, and that's kind of a head above me, right? And that was like the average height of the Numenoreans. You know, there are some indications that later figures, like Elendil, were much taller than that, right? So the Numenoreans, they were truly giants, right? They were taller than your average elf. They were big, big people, okay? So that's another thing, is they not only were they given this long life, but they were given this stature, right? And one would assume this greater strength as well. So greater in mind, greater with knowledge that just helps you to live a better life, taller, all of these things, okay? So really interesting details there as far from this passage. And this passage that we've just kind of been parsing is from Akalabeth. So we move on from there, and the next passage is from The Peoples of Middle-earth, which is the History of Middle-earth, Volume 12. And this talks a little bit about the journey, the actual journey that they undertook. And this is some really interesting stuff. I actually had not read this passage before getting into it here, so it's nice to have this. And this is one of the virtues, I think, of this book, even for people who are longtime Tolkien fans like me, is there's so many different things scattered in different places. It's nice to have all of the stuff about the Second Age of Numenor in one book right here. All right, so they were guided by the star of Earendil. I think I may have said the star of Elendil before, but they were guided by the star of Earendil, right? So Earendil is this the subject of the last chapter of the Silmarillion, chapter 24 of the Silmarillion. It's a great story about kind of the last battle, last big battle, this really battle of upheaval of the First Age. It literally changes the geography of the world. It's such a big battle. So they are guided by the star. And why Earendil is up in the sky as a star at this point? Well, you'll just have to read that chapter to understand better. But they're guided by the star to a star-shaped island, as I mentioned before. Now, this journey actually took a number of years because ships were small and the Edain were scattered. Okay, so you know, you kind of think about it like not all the Edain are going to be in one little place. And this is before mass transportation, quick transportation. So, you know, it probably took time for the word to get out that, hey, if you want to make this journey over to this new land, then you have to get here. So this journey took place over a long period of time, probably about, probably 30, 40, 50 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. And it was, the ships were provided by Círdan, who is one of the main elves. He actually exists in Lord of the Rings. You might remember him as the master of the Grey Havens. He exists here at the beginning of the Second Age. And he is providing these ships that the Numenoreans are going to be transported on. The ships are guided by elves. So the captains of these ships are elves. They're elvish ships. But the peoples on the ships are the Numenoreans. And with Elros's fleet, right? So Elros is the first king of Numenor. He's the one that leads this initial expedition of peoples of the Edain to Numenor. There may have been as many as 300 ships with up to 10,000 souls aboard. Okay. And, you know, you think about 300 ships. Well, you're like, oh, that's only 30 people per ship if that's 10,000 souls. Well, there's probably a lot of other things they were taking with them as well. Okay. Maybe not a ton of stuff, because maybe they were like, well, there's going to be a lot of stuff once you get there too. So you don't need to take everything you have with you. But I'm sure they took some things with them. So there was probably need. And, you know, you have to have stores and that kind of thing as well. Of course, they're dealing with elvish craft. So who knows how many stores they have. Maybe they just, maybe Limbus was all they really needed. And this whole process of migration took about 50 years. All right. So a couple more notes on this chapter. This next section about the Ban of the Valar, this is super important, okay? So what was the Ban of the Valar? Well, the Ban of the Valar basically said, hey, Numenoreans, you can come to Numenor, but that's as far west as you can go. And you can't go any further, because if you go further, then you're going to be getting too close to the Blessed Realm. And the Blessed Realm is for immortals only, okay? You can learn a lot more about the Blessed Realm if you read the Silmarillion, especially the earlier chapters of the Silmarillion. But the Blessed Realm, this land of Valinor, was only for the immortal people. So the Valar, the Maiar, and the elves, okay? So they could come only so far. Now, you might think that seems a little cruel, right? Why did the Valar have to treat him like that? Simply put, it was the will of Iluvatar. Okay, we talked about Iluvatar before. He is the overall god figure, the god who created everything, created all the Valar, the Ainur in the first place, the Valar, the Maiar. It was not the will of Iluvatar that the men of Numenor should come any further west than Numenor. He did not want them to step foot in the Blessed Realm. All right? And the Valar know that they cannot, they can't violate what Iluvatar has laid down, right? That's his will. They may not completely understand it, but that's his will, and they go along with it, all right? So Iluvatar created men mortal and the elves immortal, and he says, that's how I made it, and without my explicit permission, that's how it's, you know, without my explicit change to anything, that's how it's going to remain, okay? I had my reasons for doing that, and you'll understand them in time. So compare this with their lifespan. Again, this might seem cruel. Like, you let them come this close, and they can even, like, on a clear day, certain spots see the light of the Blessed Realm, or so they think. Why would they bring them this close but not let them go any further? You compare this with their lifespan, okay? They live this much longer period of time, but wouldn't that, in a way, like, you know, you think like, oh man, I, you know, if you woke up today and you're like, oh, I have 300 more years to live and I'll feel young again for a good part of that, right? Like, that would be amazing. You'd be like, wow, this is the greatest news ever. Okay. But in a way, it also just gives you longer to realize, like, to anticipate your own death, right? So it can almost seem like, wait, isn't that a little cruel in a way too? It's like, you're going to bring them a lot further. You're going to bring them within sight of just like unlimited happiness, unlimited life, unlimited happiness in the Blessed Realm, unlimited life with immortality, but you're not going to let them fully partake in it. Why do this? Why do this? And this is, my intent here is not to answer this question, because it's one of the key questions, the key themes of the Legendarium, okay? A quick thought. I mean, I believe it was so that the Numenoreans could grow strong in order to help weaker men escape the remaining shadows and works of Morgoth. You see, I think Iluvatar wanted these men to come to Numenor so that they could grow strong, build up this great civilization of men, and then go back to Middle Earth, go back to the place where all these other men remained, and be like, hey, we can show you better things. We can teach you better things. We've learned, we built this great civilization. We can help you build up your own civilizations and become great and serve one another. I truly think that that the idea here was that Numenor was supposed to have kind of a missionary purpose eventually. But that they weren't supposed to be so focused on this world unto the very end. And we'll talk a little bit more about why that is in later episodes as well, okay? That they actually had a purpose that goes beyond this world, all right? And how do we know that? Well, there's some clear indicators of how we know that. So I'm going to put that question aside for now, but we're definitely going to come back to it over the course of this series. All right, and then last thing in this section, Elros Tar-Minyatur, okay? Tar-Minyatur, what is that name all about? So we've met Elros already. Elros is the brother of Elrond. Elrond and Elros are the twin sons of Eärendil and Elwing. They are half-elven, both of them. They had a choice. They were given a choice to choose either to be part of the Elvish people or to be part of the Edain, okay?
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Elrond chose the Elvish, right? He chose to be immortal. Elros chose to be one of the Edain, right? So Elros is the one who leads this expedition, and he becomes Numenor's first king. His name, this other name, Tar-Minyator, it's Quenya, right? So we talked about Quenya and Sindarin, these two languages. It's Quenya for high first ruler. And it was this is important because it was the custom for kings of Numenor to take their name in Quenya. We're going to find out later that this custom, and this is kind of a way of like saluting, right, their origin as being friends of the elves, right, and of their, you know, the kinship affiliation they have with Valinor, okay? But we're going to find later, much later in the history of Numenor, that the kings start to abandon this custom and start to take their titles, their kingly titles, in the language of Numenor. And it almost becomes this mark of treachery to use the Quenya tongue at that point. So that's kind of much later on in the history of Numenor. So Elros is Numenor's first king. He is the brother of Elrond, the son of Arendil and Elwing. He was looking at his father's star when he led his people to Numenor, and he lived to be 500 years old and reigned for 410 years. So a 500-year-old individual, he lived a pretty long life. Certainly not immortal, but he lived a long life for sure. And then we mentioned here the scepter as the chief mark of royalty all the way to the end, and Armenelos as being the city where he ruled from. Okay, so more on that in the next episode. Couple of notes, the pencil decorations within this section are very nice. We have a pencil decoration of the island, kind of a view of the island from the sea, perhaps as they were first approaching it, and is it maybe like freshly, you know, kind of raised out of the sea. We also see this mark of heraldry. I believe this is supposed to be perhaps a mark of heraldry for the House of Elros. Perhaps it's just the general heraldry of Numenor. But we have this large bird in the center. It makes me think a little bit of, you know, it's kind of supposed to harken back to Arendil and Elwing. And you maybe understand that more if you go read that particular story in chapter 24 of the Silmarillion. And then the last image, the last pencil sketch here is the throne room of Armenelos. And we see a couple of figures in that that particular scene. So that's it for this episode as far as the details of this chapter go. A little correspondence coming here in just a moment. Next episode, we will look at the geography of Numenor, the next section of in the book of The Fall of Numenor. All right. So a couple of notes from listeners. First off, we have a note from a comment on YouTube from Jake back in August. I'm going back a little bit to August here, and this is in response. Both of these are in response to my episode 300, where I kind of reflected on 300 episodes and, you know, what I've learned along the way, and, you know, what Tolkien means to me after 300 episodes of doing this podcast. And Jake left a comment on that episode on YouTube on August 2nd of last year and said, "Hey, brother, I wish I could post this somewhere more public, but this podcast is an incredible act. I started at episode 1 and now I'm on 20 and counting. It's great banter and easy listening. It is inspiring and gives hope during the often doldrum work days. I am a father of 3 small ones and I commend you and your wife for your excellent work. I will continue to share. Keep going. This is awesome." Well, I appreciate it, Jake. Thank you very much. Those are kind words, and I hope you've continued to listen along the way and you're continuing to enjoy the podcast and for all it's worth. The next correspondence comes from a patron, Wordy. So this is also on August 2nd in response to episode 300. And Wordy, let me pull this one up here. Wordy said, "Listening to your 300th episode now. Wow, has it really been 300 episodes? You guys are the best, and I always enjoy listening to the podcast. Keep up the hard work." Well, thank you, Wordy. Thank you for your support. Thank you for financial support and for your kind words. And he, of course, wrote much more in this note. A lot of good stuff here. It's been a long journey, and it's, you know, in some ways I feel like we're only getting started, and I'm looking forward to what the future will hold, and just continuing to see what comes out as far as, you know, hopefully, you know, over time we're going to get better and better quality in terms of TV shows and that kind of thing. But at the very least, we've always got Tolkien's works, and there's so much to reflect on in there. And I'm just happy to be a part of this community and hear from all of y'all whenever you write us. Thank you very much, Wordy. All right. You too can be heard on the Tolkien Road. Drop us a line. You can correspond with us in a number of ways. YouTube, TolkienRoad.com, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, Twitter @TolkienRoad, And you can also find us easily on Instagram and Facebook. We'll do our best to respond to you somehow and at some point. All right. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., Eru27, Emilio P., Jonathan D., Mike M., Robert H., Paul D., Julia, Wordy, Joe Bagelman, Jacob S., Richard K., Matt R., Matthew W., Garrett P., Chris K., John W., Eugene D., Chris B., Daniel S., Seb M., Shayna Supreme, Corey C., Ms. Anonymous, Andrew T., Red Hawk, Shannon S., Brian O., Zeke F., James L., Chris L., Chuck F., Azia V., Ish of the Hammer, Teresa C., David of Pints with Jack, Eric B., and Johanna T. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening. We will talk at you next time. Bye-bye.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.